This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And there is really a need to provide life-saving assistance. And this need is really alarming. The situation is really alarming.
That's International Organization for Migration Chief of Mission in Ethiopia, Abibatu Wayne Fall, talking about displaced people in the Ethiopia-Sudan border. Details coming up also. A Nigerian immigrant makes history in the U.S. state of Colorado today. An African peace delegation heads to Ukraine and Moscow late this month. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. At this hour, in the western U.S. city of Colorado Springs, Yemi Mobolade is making history as he becomes the first black mayor of the city. He is taking the oath now. The new mayor, an immigrant from Nigeria, also is the first in the city's history who isn't a member of the Republican Party. Mobolade, who co-founded two restaurants and served in the local government to advise small businesses, ran as an independent. He immigrated to the United States 27 years ago and moved to Colorado Springs, a mid-sized city in the western state of Colorado, in 2010. VOA's Haruna Shehu, with our Hausa service, is in Colorado Springs, and he interviewed Mobolade earlier. It is part of their conversation.
You know, part of the immigrant story is that we see opportunities. We see possibilities. I've been clear that, you know, while things are not perfect in the U.S., I mean, we're still blessed more than many. I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria, and I know what my origins were like. And so when you're in a land like this and you see nothing but opportunities, you pursue it, you fight for it. I'm the product of just the coaching and investment of many leaders, so I'm committed to paying it forward. To whom much is given, much is required. So, and then the last thing is when you look at the world, the state of the world around you, and you realize it's not great, and sometimes it feels like it's getting worse. Instead of looking around to see who's going to fix the problem, who's going to step up, you have to be the change you want to see in the world. So I did raise my hands, and my family and I, we raised our hands to say, here we are, send us. And it paid off.
What are your vision for this great city?
I've been clear about this vision from day one in the campaign, is that Colorado Springs will become an inclusive, culturally rich, economically prosperous, safe, and vibrant city on a hill that shines brightly, that we become the model city for the world of what it looks like when residents and citizens and leaders work together. It's just in this wonderful harmony. We can solve any problem. So those four things that I envision, if I do my job well, we will look more inclusive, we'll become more culturally rich, we'll become more safe, because a lot of families want a safe city, and also will become economically prosperous.
Yeah, picking up from the last thing, if you do your job well, you are a newcomer in this area.
Right.
Are you not concerned that this will be like a huge challenge, you know, to do your job well, as you said?
I'd be more concerned if there were no challenges. That's the call of leadership. Leadership can be lonely. Leadership can be isolating. There is a burden that we leaders carry. I made my peace about that. I made my peace also. If we did win, you know, I know I'm ushering a whole new reality. I know I'm also going against some power structures that has historically been in this city. So it will be challenging, but I'm not afraid to take on any challenge because I'm very confident in my skill set and abilities and my winsome ability. And so that's just par for the course. I often say that the best definition of leadership is when you look at Jesus. One day he was told Hosanna, next 5 days later crucify him, and that's what I expect my time as the mayor of Colorado Springs will be like.
There are so many people like you, I mean immigrants, myself included. What message, I know you have said something, but what message do you have for immigrants in this country?
Oh gosh, how much time do we have? we have a wonderful opportunity to to bring to the table what's best of us as Americans. We have this incredible opportunity to have one leg on the outside and one leg on the inside. So we, what President Reagan calls this fresh perspective. So the way we talk about the U.S., the way we talk about opportunities, I mean, it's very different. We're a nation of immigrants. That's how we were birthed. So in a weird way, we get to restore the very essence of who this country is meant to be, because we see opportunities. We have the hustle, the desire to just keep making things better, and that's what we need. So to my fellow immigrants, from folks that are interested in running for office, which I've, you know, there's actually a city council member in Westminster, Colorado, who's a Nigerian. I met him last week, so I'm really proud of him, and he's so inspired by what I've done. And across the country, and even Nigerians and immigrants who are working in regular jobs, or they find themselves in a nonprofit space, my message is, your city needs you. You have a lot more to offer. Stop hiding, and you will be surprised that if someone like me can be embraced and respected, you too can be embraced and respected. You just have to see yourself beyond the messages that you're telling yourself that you're just an immigrant, like you have nothing to offer. No, our nation needs you. So it's my call for you to join me in this quest as we try to make our cities and towns and communities just an incredible place to live, work, play, and worship.
Metemma is a town linking Ethiopia with Sudan since April 15th, when the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces clashed in Khartoum. Thousands have been flocking to this town. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, is on the ground assisting the displaced. Abibatu Wayne Fall is chief of mission for IOM Ethiopian office. She was in Metemma recently and says she was surprised at how the peaceful border town all of a sudden became very congested.
Yes, thank you. As you mentioned, I was in Metemma last week, so which is in Amara and after Gondar. So yes, one of the main observations that I've noticed is really how crowded towards Metemma. Metemma is at the entry point between Ethiopia and Sudan, and there are many arrivals and many people scattered across the border, including mothers, children, sitting under 40 degrees Celsius heat, and some days are even hotter. And it is not really sustainable, nor healthy to live like this.
Abibatu says the situation in the border town of Metemma is really alarming. Despite the hurdles, her organization and fellow partners, she says, are working diligently to provide assistance, setting up temporary accommodations and health services.
For instance, IAM and partners have been working to provide assistance. We have installed wash facilities there, but clearly there are so many people that the facilities cannot really, are not adequate to provide or to accommodate the needs of these people that are there because of the high number. So this means that really the large numbers of new arrivals has become a real major challenge for us. And there is really a need to provide life-saving assistance. And this news is really alarming. The situation is really alarming.
More resources will be needed in the coming days to adequately respond to the crisis. Abibatu says that our efforts should be scaled up. IOM, she says, is appealing to the international community for more funds to help the refugees in the border town of Metemma.
So what we are doing for now, we have a migrant response center that is also overcrowded, where we are providing assistance, including temporary accommodation, wash, protection and health services, including also onward transport. This is what we are doing and looking at really at the needs of the population there, the most vulnerable one. And as we say, now as of now, we have recorded more than 35,000 people who have arrived in Metemma, and the majority of them being Ethiopian. We have recorded more than 66 nationalities, and for those CCN also, they need support. So meaning the accommodation, but be supported to return to their country of origin. And now this is what IAM is doing. And as I said, given the daily arrival, numbers of daily arrival, and the number of people more and more vulnerable arriving, we really need to scale up. And this means that we need more resources to be able to provide the adequate responses for those people in need. So that's why we are now appealing. We have prepared an appeal that we have already published, so requiring 25 million in order already to be able to continue.
IOM Chief of Mission in Ethiopia, Bibatu Wainfall, points out the cooperation of the Ethiopian government regarding the crisis. She also says that Ethiopia's Beni Shangul zone bordering Sudan has now become a second entry point, and the assistance should be expanded to that area, she says. Overall, IOM's latest statistics show that at least 843,130 people across Sudan have been displaced, with nearly 259,000 fleeing to neighboring countries. And in news from Khartoum, Sudan's warring military factions clashed by air and on the ground in the capital Khartoum today, adding to the misery of residents struggling with limited food, water, and medicine. Fighting between the army and paramilitary rapid support forces, now in its 8th week, has killed hundreds of civilians and driven 400,000 across borders and more than 1.2 million out of the capital Khartoum and other cities. Saudi Arabia and the United States brokered talks that led to imperfectly observed ceasefires, but further talks collapsed last week. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrives in Saudi Arabia later today. His mission is aimed at strengthening strained ties with the Saudis, but his trip also will focus on efforts to end the conflicts in Sudan and Yemen and the battle against the Islamic State militants. Also, the Democratic Republic of Congo says 10 of its citizens died in Sudanese army strikes on a Khartoum university. It is demanding a response from Sudan's government on how the deaths happen and asking for the return of the bodies. The South African government says a 6-member team of leaders from the continent will head to Russia and Ukraine in mid-June on a peace mission to end the war in Eastern Europe. Spokespeople for President Cyril Ramaphosa told VOA the team's set to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev as a starting point. Darren Taylor reports.
The South African president's representatives say he's in regular contact with Putin and Zelensky about the African peace mission. They say Ramaphosa, plus the leaders of Egypt, Republic of Congo, Senegal, Uganda, and Zambia, are going to draw up a roadmap toward ending the Ukraine war. The African leaders met Monday and said their first objective would be to secure a ceasefire and thereafter a lasting peace in the region. John Stremlau is a former United States diplomat to several African countries and currently professor of international relations at Wits University in Johannesburg. He says Africa has a vested interest in stopping the war in Ukraine as soon as possible.
The real concern that should be uppermost in our mind is getting a peaceful resolution of this god-awful crisis that is causing such devastation and so much human suffering, and then the collateral damage to Africa in grain exports here and fuel and other commodities that are driving our inflation that is so bad.
Stremlau says it's very interesting but not surprising that it appears as if South Africa is leading the peace mission. The African National Congress, the ANC government, has faced global criticism for its close ties with Moscow and refusal to condemn Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Even as the war has raged, South Africa has hosted the Russian Navy for joint military exercises and dispatched its top army general to the Kremlin to discuss military cooperation. The United States has accused the Ramaphosa administration of selling weapons to Russia Pretoria says it's investigating the allegation. Given this context, some analysts say it's difficult to imagine Ukraine regarding the African peace mission as impartial. At a media briefing Tuesday, South Africa's Deputy Minister of International Relations, Alvin Buertas, said it's because of Africa's neutrality that the peace initiative has a chance of success.
We have heard even President Zelensky, President Putin, welcome any intervention on de-escalation, and that is our departure point. So these peace missions from the African continent indeed are welcome. And we wish
Buertas says the African mediation team wants to help end the fighting for the sake of the entire world, not just for Africa.
I think the issues about this war in Europe after the COVID-19 pandemic have brought us in a situation where economies worldwide have lost traction. There's increased food insecurity, increased poverty. So I think we are hopeful and we are confident that the peace envoys ultimately will enable the de-escalation of conflict.
In a recent interview with South African State Television, United States Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said her government welcomed any peace initiative aimed at ending the conflict in Eastern Europe. But she attached one non-negotiable condition, that every country involved in the talks understands that Russia is the aggressor. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Nigeria's main labor groups, the Nigeria Labor Congress and the Trade Union Congress, agreed to suspend their strike scheduled to begin tomorrow over President Bola Tinubu's decision to end the fuel subsidy. Our reporter from Abuja tells us more.
Labor groups say they called off the strike to protest the end of the government's fuel subsidy to enable further negotiations with the federal government. The decision came at the end of the meeting late Monday evening. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Femi Badjabiamila, chaired the meeting with the Nigeria Labour Congress and the Trade Union Congress. He said a tripartite committee would be set up to review the wage increase the labour unions are demanding. He said the committee also would review the $800 million World Bank loan to Nigeria to ease the impact of the fuel subsidy, especially for low-income workers.
The federal government, the TUC and the NLC, to establish a joint committee to review the proposal for any wage increase or award and establish a framework and timeline for implementation. The federal government, the TUC and the NLC, to review World Bank finance cash transfer scheme and propose inclusion of low-income earners in the program.
He said all other demands submitted by the TUC to the federal government will be assessed by the joint committee. In a related event, the National Industrial Court in Abuja on Monday restrained the Nigeria Labour Congress and the Trade Union Congress from embarking on their planned strike. The two labor groups had planned to strike starting Wednesday until their demands were met. The Trade Union Congress met with government representatives on Sunday and demanded a new minimum wage to ease the effects of the removal of the subsidy, but was silent on the figure. Although Nigeria is a major oil producer, it does not refine enough oil for consumer use, so it must import fuel for vehicles and other uses. The government subsidy on consumer fuel prices costs billions of dollars a year and led to warnings from economists, the World Bank and others that it could not be sustained. When President Tinubu said last week the subsidy would end, prices more than doubled, hitting consumers hard in an economy already burdened with inflation and high unemployment. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Opposition and rights groups in Zimbabwe are bemoaning the passing of a so-called patriotic bill by the lower house of parliament, which they say curtails several fundamental freedoms enshrined in the country's constitution. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where lawyers say that if President Emmerson Mnangagwa signs the bill into law, it will not stand up in court because it is unconstitutional.
Those are members of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party celebrating after the lower house of parliament this week passed the Criminal Law Code Amendment Bill, dubbed by its supporters as the Patriotic Bill. Among other things, the bill, if signed into law, would authorize penalties against people found willfully damaging the sovereignty and national interest of Zimbabwe. Kennedy Shokuda, the clerk of Zimbabwe's parliament, briefly talked to journalists after the vote. He says it's done in the National Assembly. It's now going to the Senate chamber for further debate, he said. The Senate chamber is even more dominated by ZANU-PF than the lower house where the bill sailed through. Fadzai Mahere, the spokeswoman for the main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, described the bill as dangerous and unconstitutional and said ZANU-PF is trying to gain an advantage in the August 23 general election.
The bill itself violates sundry constitutional rights and freedoms, including freedom of association, freedom of expression, political rights, and others. ZANU-PF has reduced our great nation into an outpost of tyranny. They're clearly in panic mode as we approach the election and on an unbridled crusade to close the democratic space completely in Zimbabwe.
Mayere said ZANU-PF cannot win a free and fair election in Zimbabwe.
So what we've seen is ZANU-PF retaliating with repressive legislation, weaponization of the law. Frankly, no amount of panicky despotism by ZANU-PF will stand in the way of change whose time has come.
ZANU-PF officials could not be reached for comment on the bill Friday. Introducing the bill in parliament late last year, Ziyambi Ziyambi, Zimbabwe's justice minister, said the bill seeks to prohibit private citizens from making false statements or undermining the country or acting as self-appointed ambassadors, meeting foreign officials to undermine national interest. Musa Kika, a constitutional lawyer who heads the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum, says it would be unfortunate if President Mnangagwa signs the bill into law.
This is an unconstitutional law. It infringes on all sorts of civil and political rights that the Constitution gives. In my estimation, this bill is the most draconian law that we have seen in independent Zimbabwe. If this law is gazetted, obviously it will be challenged in the court of law. If not all of it, then significant parts of it, because the bill is manifestly and patently unconstitutional.
It is not clear when or if President Mnangagwa, who is currently in Malawi, will sign the patriotic bill into law. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Audrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.